And we're on the air. Good morning, everyone. This is On.NET, a weekly discussion with the .NET team and guests. And today our guests are Brian and Colin from Apsera. They're here to talk today about the NATS server and the corresponding .NET library. But before we talk about that, we have a couple of announcements to make. The first one is that starting today, we are actually also publishing the videos on Channel 9. The first one is already online. There is a new On.NET show on Channel 9, and the first video with Miguel de Icaza is already online, and the other ones will be published soon. So that should bring more audience, a more diversified audience to the show, which is a really good thing. And it will also bring some nice features such as an audio feed. So you will be able actually to listen to the show as a podcast if that's your thing, more than you know, spending an hour watching our lovely faces. And the second announcement that I want to make is that we are going to try to get the show closer to the .NET Foundation, and one of the things we'll do is that we'll have Martin Woodward on the show soon to talk about the foundation. And in general, we are going to try to work more with the foundation for the show. That's it for announcements. We can now switch to our guests. So welcome, guys. Why don't you introduce yourselves?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us, guys. Good to be here. So, and it sounds like an exciting new format to kick off the year with the show. So that's nice. My name's Brian Flannery. I'm the community manager at NATS. It's a open source high performance messaging project sponsored by Apsera that we'll talk about today.
And I'm Colin Sullivan. I'm a principal engineer at Apsera. I've been in messaging for about 20 years. All the way through Telerion, TIBCO with Rendezvous and EMS and FTL, and now NATS with Apsera.
Excellent. So my own personal experience with messaging is relatively limited. What I know is MQTT that I've been using on devices such as the Raspberry Pi. So how is it different?
How's NATS different? Or I mean, it's a different.
Yeah. Well, what is unique about NATS? What makes it better? I suppose.
It also might be good to provide people with a general idea of the whole domain to start with. Like, I'm sure there's some people out there that don't know what any of these things are.
Yeah.
Including me.
Yeah, why does it matter, right?
Yeah, why do these products matter? Why are they needed? What kind of situation would you get into with your app where you should say, oh, NATS is that thing that I learned about, you know, 6 months ago. Now's the time when I should be using it within my app.
Yeah, fair question. So yeah, I can help establish just a little bit of context. And maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the use patterns or, you know, where we typically see people considering or using NATS. So NATS was actually created by Derek Collison. He's also the founder of Apsera. But prior to that, he was a CTO at VMware in the Cloud Applications Group and did the original design work and sort of the original architecture and POC work around Cloud Foundry that most people, I'm sure, are familiar with. And at the time, this is about five years ago, of course, there was a big paradigm shift happening in, you know, enterprise computing, not unlike what's happening today. There's a lot of interesting last couple of years things been happening. But long story short, you know, needed a very high performance, simple, you know, always available messaging system to really power Cloud Foundry. That was kind of the initial antithesis, the genesis of NATS. So that was about 5 years ago. We also, in Apsera, it also, you know, is used internally as a back control plane inside of our product, of course. But this is a, you know, we're talking about messaging. We, of course, don't mean instant messaging. We're talking about infrastructure messaging where when I have applications or services or systems that need to communicate with each other and I need to do it at scale, this is where NATS really fits in very well. So the kind of the core emphasis of NATS or the design philosophy is really satisfying two things. One is simplicity, and the other is performance. This was sort of the initial design consideration around it when it was, you know, how do we scale up a PaaS like a Cloud Foundry? Since then, Nats has, you know, it's, again, it's been on GitHub for 4 or 5 years and Ruby, and then we ported over about 3 years ago to Go. And we have a multitude of clients now. Of course, the one we're here to talk about is the .NET client. But if you think about some of the things happening nowadays, you mentioned Internet of Things. A lot of folks are looking at microservices architectures, you know, where you're taking potentially a monolithic application, or you might be writing something new, but you're breaking it into many different services. They all need to communicate with each other essentially in real time. And it might be a very distributed architecture. You know, nowadays you don't necessarily know when you're designing an application, there's no guarantee 6 months from now where a particular part of the application is going to be running. You know, people are deploying applications to many different cloud environments, many different on-premise, off-premise. So you think about the distributed nature of systems today and then just the scale involved. Think about some of the things going on with, as I said, Internet of Things, microservices, also mobile computing. You might have large companies that want to deliver some content to a very large number of subscribers. This is where NATS really excels, when you're saying, hey, I need to broadcast large number of messages to a lot of different systems. I need to do it extremely quickly, and I need it reliable. Like, I've not talked to a developer yet, and again, it's obviously my role as a community manager. I haven't talked to anyone yet that said, hey, NATS crashed. You know, there's some very interesting things we do. We can talk about that in order to ensure that NATS is always available. And protects itself at all costs, really provides a dial tone, system dial tone. So I'll stop there. Hopefully that gave some context, but we can dive into that a little deeper as well.
So how does it, if I wanted to start an application using NATS, would I subscribe to some service? Would I install something on my servers? How does it happen?
Well, as a application developer, you know, let's start from development. We do have a NuGet package, so then you just download your NuGet package and start developing from there. You also need a server someplace. Now, there's the NAT server, which you can run as a container. You can download it via Go and run it that way. But those are really the two things you need to get started with.
And what's the NAT server look like? So I definitely get the NuGet package piece, that sounds like what I would call a client library.
Right.
And then the server piece, so that's some piece of software, not probably completely unlike a web server in its super general nature. Does that run on a Windows box? Does that run on a Linux box? Do I just need one of those, or do I have to scale that server as well?
Well, the server was written in Go, so you can obtain it via Go. And any place Go runs, you can obtain it there. But then we also have binary distributions for Linux and Mac, and I'm hoping soon to be Windows.
So what does the server do? Is it like a message broker?
It is. We use a publish-subscribe paradigm. So being that you publish a message to what we call a subject, and anybody on the other end listening to that subject, subscribe to that subject, will receive that message. So that's basically the paradigm we use and how it works at a real basic level.
Could you actually contrast it? Like, we have this thing called SignalR that is built on top of WebSockets. It feels like there's some similarity in the usage pattern at a super high level. Is that fair or no?
You know, to be fair, I really don't know much about SignalR. So,
but you know about WebSockets?
I know about WebSockets, yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, so at the base level, the server and the client are connected via sockets, regular TCP sockets. And we just have a protocol built on top of that. That's a clear text protocol, really simple, but yet very performant. And then on top of that, what's important is we also layer security if you want, TLS 1.2 security. So at this point, we're mainly socket-based, not necessarily web sockets. There's some things we may be looking to in the future with that. But
okay, that makes sense. Yes. And what about scaling the server? Do you ever get to the point where it's like, oh, I need to have two NAT servers in my organization, or I need to, you know, put this onto a bigger box, or does it not typically get to that point?
Well, I mean, for that always-on dial tone, we definitely recommend people cluster our servers. And it's really easy to do. So basically, you start a server, you let it know, here's another server, and they connect, and they're routed. Anytime you need more need to scale, you simply add a server into the cluster, and you don't even have to restart. And then you can scale that way. Anytime.
And the clients are going to know how to talk to that cluster, and it's transparent for the client?
Well, it is. With the client, you need to give it the nodes of the cluster it can connect to. And very soon, we're working on auto discovery. So the client will actually connect to one and know about everything else in the cluster. So the client can really actually be brain dead. All it knows is, hey, I'm connecting to a cluster. If something happens, a node in the cluster goes down, the client will automatically fail over and switch.
Right. So if I'm a client that's connecting to this cluster, then are there just a particular set of categories or names that I'm interested in will subscribe to?
So it's those subjects, if I understand correctly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can subscribe to you can use wildcard in subjects.
You certainly can. Let me break down the what you would see in an application flow. So first, as a client, you use our client library and you establish a connection. So with that connection, you give it a NAT server address, which is basically, it's in a URI format. You say NATs :// your host name and your port. And then your client will connect. And then what you do is you can, at that point, just publish away. You can just start sending messages. One of the parameters you use when you publish is a subject. You can also subscribe. So then you subscribe, and you let the server know, hey, I'm interested in this subject. I want to receive messages on it. So then from there, your application will start receiving messages. You can choose to either handle the messages synchronously or asynchronously, but those are really the only things you really have to do in a NATS program. You can get or a NATS application. You can get a lot more complicated if you want, but that's really the general flow.
Makes sense.
Now, as far as publishing and subscribing, there are wildcards. So what you can do, I prefer to think of it almost as a tree or a hierarchy. So our particular syntax for wildcarding involves a greater than sign and an asterisk. An asterisk, so if you think of your subjects as tokens connected via periods. You can substitute any token when you're subscribing with a star, which means I want to receive anything that kind of matches this. Or if you do greater than, I want to receive anything that meets this first part of this subject and everything since. You know, an easy example is geography, location. So I've got subjects U.S., Colorado, California, Washington, and then maybe various cities in there. If I want to subscribe the messages just for a particular city, I would do Colorado or U.S., Colorado, Denver as my subject. If, let's say, I want to get everything for Colorado, I just do us.colorado.star. Mm-hmm. Everything for the U.S., us.greater than, everything possible, just a greater than.
That makes sense. Can you tell us a little bit about the... So we were just talking about subjects now. Can you tell us a little bit about the payload and what data types those support?
The data types really dictated by...
Yeah, I think so.
We have a bit of connectivity issues here.
Yeah, apparently.
Did you hear the question?
I did, about what sort of data types?
Yeah.
Does NATS natively support?
So in NATS, at the core level, and this is keeping with the NATS tenet of simplicity, we really send everything as bytes. Some of the client libraries do a bit more, allowing you to pass strings, but generally, in the protocol, everything is a byte. There's no types. What we do is, in the client libraries, on top of that, we offer a feature we call encoding. It's really, in the .NET world, it's serialization. And that's how you can type stuff yourself in your application. One of the features we also offer is overriding the serialization. So let's say you have your data, your object, and you want to send it. Well, you create what we call as an encoded connection. Works the same thing, same way as a connection, just that you pass it some methods to, or delegates to serialize. Then what happens is you can override that, and let's say you want to do JSON. Well, then what you do is you take your object, serialize it into a JSON string, pass it along, and send it. On the opposite side, you deserialize the JSON and build your object out of that, or deserialize your object out of the JSON, I should say.
But the application is responsible for plugging in the serialization that it wants to use to exchange data, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Okay. So this would be how you would communicate, say, between the .NET application and the Python application, for example.
Exactly. That's a great use for it.
Right. So by default, you can just... from what I've seen from the client library on .NET, it's very idiomatic. You can actually just give it objects, and it seems to magically take care of serializing and deserializing that. And that is really nice, because the programming model looks very natural. But from what you're saying, I understand that I can actually... That wouldn't work, for example, to communicate with other technologies, right?
No, not unless you overrode, I said, overrode things to do some common format, such as JSON or protobuf, whatever you want.
Right. So is the idea that, say, Bertrand was using Python and I was using .NET, because I'm the smarter one.
Wow, you're the boss.
Yeah,
that's right.
No, this is a small joke. We had these two apps that were talking to one another via NATS. Is the basic idea that if we were doing the country.state.city kind of thing, like you talked about, that we would have to agree on what the payload was? Say it was a whole bunch of lat long information, then we would have agreed on that so that I would serialize it a particular way, and then he would deserialize it, and that contract would be understood.
Exactly.
That
fair?
That's
okay.
Fair. Yep. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, this sounds like a good system. Like, not too much forced on you.
No, you can literally write an app in about 4 or 5 lines.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, you mentioned IoT, it was interesting. Since you just mentioned Python, a couple weeks ago it was a great IoT talk at a Python meetup, actually, but where they were connecting a bunch of Raspberry Pi devices. A guy named John Lockwood did it in the developer community, but there's a blog post. You can find his blog post, but I believe he said it took him 4 or 5 minutes to get everything set up, and he was off to the races. So I think that, we're very serious about simplicity. In fact, we're pretty judicious about sometimes we'll have requests or things we're thinking about from a functionality standpoint where we really say, we really want to keep NATS extremely simplistic. Right now, we've had external third-party benchmarks on 7, 8, 9 million messages a second, and I know Colin's .NET client that we've been really impressed with the .NET performance and just what the platform's enabled. But I know on his laptop, on a virtual machine, was seeing 4 million or north of that messages a second. So really, the simplicity is obviously something we take very seriously and maintain the performance and scalability.
Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah, that's does one of you have maybe a speaker that is a little too loud? We are getting some echo here in the audio.
Is it still there?
Nope, that's better.
Okay, good. Sorry about that. Hopefully that wasn't too too painful to listen to then. I don't know when the echo cut in or out, but...
It was mostly when we were talking, but... I was talking about performance and saying that this is really, really impressive performance. It would be interesting to understand how you're achieving such performance. And I know you guys are, can we talk about the work you're currently doing with Core, or is it too early to talk about? Oh, too late, sorry.
first off, let me say the support you guys have given us in our development with Core has just been phenomenal. I mean, within a day, you guys are responding. I'm really happy with that. With the Core stuff, I think we're getting really close. There's just a few things I think we're waiting on. I ran the API port tool, and I think over 90-some percent of the calls were there. And we actually use a lot in our library. So we're very happy. Hopefully, pretty soon, first off, Core is definitely on the roadmap.
Hang on, let me go and mute myself.
That wasn't you.
All right, I'm not guilty. I'm coming off mute.
Do you have headphones that you can use, maybe?
Let's see. Colin, you say, or Colin, go ahead and say something.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds like we're good.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, I'm definitely
good.
All right.
I apologize about that. Let me try something.
Well, I think it's gone.
I think it's gone, yes. What were we saying? Yeah, we were talking about Core.
Core, yeah. So, again, the great support. We're almost there.
You'll have some opportunities to further improve the performance, actually, with Core. There are a few features coming up in Core that hopefully will help you guys. We're doing a lot of work on reducing allocations and making sure that you can work with streams of data in very efficient ways. So I'm sure that will be very useful to you guys.
You know, I bet it will. We do some string manipulation, and particularly if you guys are doing anything with reducing copies of bytes when you're doing array copies, that sort of stuff, that would go a really long way for helping us.
That's definitely a focus.
And if you have data to share that with us that actually could help us, focus on the right things. That's also very useful.
Yeah, we definitely love it when customers or partners come to us and say, look at this particular code path, here's this performance trace. We are not happy with this. Please help us with this particular thing. That's helpful. When someone comes to us and just says, my application isn't running fast enough, that's a fairly vague kind of statement, not to suggest that emotion is misplaced, but when someone's done the work to drill down to a particular code path, that's very helpful and enables us to be a bit more effective in helping you.
I could absolutely see that. We spent a lot of time going through the code path with performance tools, profiling, even just eyeballing, and some experimentation. To go through and pare out any additional copies we were doing, try to reduce memory allocations. One thing in general I'm really impressed with .NET is how well it reuses objects that haven't been picked up by the garbage collector. So the object reuse is just, once I'm guessing apparently there's a pool of objects that haven't quite been collected by the garbage collector yet, and .NET seems to reuse those very efficiently.
What led you to believe that that was happening?
It wasn't as fast as adding pooling. Or, I mean, adding pooling wasn't as fast as .NET on its own.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was one of these, wow. Good job.
Actually, interesting to understand exactly what's going on there.
Yeah. I have to admit that sounds... I wasn't aware that we did some automatic object pooling. I know that our garbage collector definitely tries to do a good job, but I wasn't aware of the second part of it. So that might be another thing we could discuss separately about this particular thing where you think it's doing a great job and maybe get a bit more clarity on why you think it's doing a great job.
Sure. And again, I'm making an assumption. I don't know what the mechanisms underneath are being used in .NET, but we'll just say I'm impressed there.
Okay. It's a good place to start.
So another feature that's coming is buffered arrays, where you can actually reuse buffers in interesting ways. That's another feature that might be interesting for you guys to look at. I think that is already available on GitHub. There is a part of the source tree where the experimental stuff lives. I'll try to put a link in the description after the show.
And isn't that going to be in our next in the RC?
I don't know.
Okay. I thought ASP.NET had moved to using that.
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
So that was one of the things. Communication-wise, I noticed that the default TCP buffers were sufficient, but by increasing the size of the buffers, I was able to really get a lot more throughput. I'm talking 4 to 5 times magnitude.
And is that eight? So one would think that was not a .NET specific thing, but more of an OS thing. Have you not seen similar effects elsewhere?
Yeah. Not as I would have to look, compare our C client, but I will just say that was one of the first things I did that really boosted performance.
Is it maybe the case then that the baseline implementation, the baseline implementation was maybe there was something wrong with it to cause there to be such a big gap?
You mean the implementation, the original Go client, or you mean my first pass?
No, I meant when you went with the default TCP buffering, maybe there was something wrong with it that caused the gap to be so big when you increased it. I have no idea.
There could be. You know, one of the performance profiling is almost an art. You know, you just have to just... sort of keep trying different things and kind of guess what might work, what might not. It's a lot of quantitative testing and hypothesis testing at times. So that's one thing I just thought I'd mention.
Makes sense. That's positive.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to get the lights right here.
We're having... difficulty.
No, that doesn't work.
So I have a question back to kind of application architecture, which is, I have more experience with, I have some experience using Azure, and I know one of the services they have there is Azure Q, and the basic idea there is it's a app-to-app communication mechanism. You basically push something into the queue to say, this is work that someone else is supposed to do or some other type of information. And then the other app, it does the opposite. It pulls things off the queue and acts on that particular piece of information. And that's a good system. I'm wondering, would NATS potentially be an alternative to that, or that's kind of a different use case?
Well, a queue is really one-to-one communication, and you can have multiple apps pulling off of a queue. It's a great way to distribute work. But we're really PubSub. Now, what applications can absolutely do is define unique subjects and communicate that way if they want to do the one-on-one. Or we even have built-in request-reply, which isn't a queuing model, but just thought I'd mention that. One of the things a queue generally implies is a new feature that's coming out in NATS soon, which is persistence. So I just wanted to offer that as we have persistence, to emulate a queue, you could define a unique subject between your applications. You push into the queue. At the other end, you pop off, and the applications can come and go.
Yeah, the persistence, I didn't bring that up. That was definitely something I was thinking about. I know in the queue scenario, you can imagine someone uploads a picture that needs to be, crunched down to some smaller size, or it needs to be facial recognized or something like that. And you really want to make sure that if servers reboot, that particular piece of information isn't lost. And so I assume that's kind of where your persistence scenario would fill in as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you mentioned compression. That would be another great use case for our encoding. So as part of your serialization, you compress.
So what happens when a client goes down, for example, and then comes back up online? Are there ways to recover from that kind of catastrophic scenario?
Well, the core layer of NATS is really simple. So the client would need to let me rephrase this. With the simplicity of NATS, there's really no state maintained about the clients. So when the client comes back up, he needs to establish all of his subscriptions. If there's any messages that were pending, he needs to send again. And that is something that we are going to address with the persistence coming up. But right now, we just prefer to keep it really simple.
So it's more about real-time communication, and whatever is published, I just consume that, but... So in that way, it's very different from a queue, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. At least right now.
No.
One thing, if we're talking about clients crashing, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the high availability of the NATS cluster. So let's say a client's publishing messages, and its the server it's connected to in the NATS cluster goes down. Well, the client will automatically try to reconnect to another server, assuming you configured it that way. It'll automatically try to reconnect to another server in the cluster. So what we've done is, in the spirit of simplicity for the application programmer, you can keep sending messages. And the client library will actually buffer them. And when you reconnect, it'll send them. So okay. It makes transitioning in the event of failure, your machine goes down that's hosting the NAT server, it makes that transition seamless.
So is there a notion of a transaction in there involved, or?
No, we don't really have any, without state in the server, we don't really have any concept of a transaction.
But you, there is an acknowledgement from the server to the client saying, yeah, I got your message.
You can have that. There is a mode that's called verbose. That can actually, it'll send a message back saying, I got your message.
Yeah, I'm asking because in MQTT, actually, you always have that choice of, sending a message with acknowledgement or not, and so on. So.
Yeah, acknowledgement, when you have sort of the always-on dial tone and you're sending a message, the acknowledgement is more important when you have the concept of persistence. So I want to know that this message is guaranteed. What we do is we suggest with Core NATS, we've got very, very easy to use request reply mechanisms, very, very easy to use publish subscribe. So with Core NATS, always on dial tone, 99.9% of the time you're fine. That percent of the, or you know, that very, very small percent of the time where one of your machines goes down or something like that, and there is a transition, your applications at the application level can always send messages for remediation there.
Right. It's kind of the difference with, you know, the old telephone system that was circuit-based as opposed to packet-based, you know, that had,
And again, with our persistence work coming up, we're going to address a lot of these issues.
Yeah. Can you talk about some of your customers, maybe, and give us an idea of the kind of application that takes benefit from that?
Yeah, sure. You know, it's interesting. As I mentioned at the beginning of the call, there's sort of two or three major sort of, I would say, use case patterns or types of scenarios we're seeing NATS use pretty heavily in. You know, so one I mentioned already was Internet of Things. Of course, it's still early days in the Internet of Things space, but there's also already some pretty interesting companies using NATS. One is a company, you know, this whole maker movement that's come around. It's a company called Little Bits. That's very popular in the Internet of Things and maker movement space. But really great community member there named Paulo Perez and his team. But they're, you know, they use NATS essentially. I'm getting an echo. Yeah. Let's see if that helps. Yeah, cool. So you can imagine all these devices they have out there and the amount of data just every second that they're generating. Using NATS as a transport to transport the data back to a monitoring, you know, reporting tool that they have. There's a few very large Internet of Things, you know, IoT in the home companies as well that are using NATS for communication and starting to do POC work around communication of large-scale IoT infrastructures. A couple weeks ago by a company called NextGen Leads, I believe out of San Diego, and Aaron on their team wrote it. But this is a company where, think of if you're a you're a really large company and you want to get leads, so lead aggregation, but you want to make sure that, you know, you're not coming in right after someone who's just called on these leads. You want to make sure that they're fresh. You know, every second counts. It's literally a matter of, you know, seconds or split seconds. So it's a lead auctioning system. That's sort of their core IP. But NATS is what they use to really allow all of the services that you think of all the complexity involved in real-time auctioning or near real-time auctioning. So NATS is a microservices transport there for those guys. Bridgevine's a company in the Southeast. You know, Andy Stone gave a good talk at the December. We had a meetup in Atlanta in, I think, actually early December, yeah. We spoke about how Bridgevine's using it. This is a company that does customer interaction portals. So you think of you know, large companies like DirecTVs and Comcast of the world where, you know, whether it's on your phone or through their through their website or what have you. And they're also using it sort of as the pub sub, they call it a sort of a hub for connecting all their microservices on their infrastructure. And he gave a really great talk that's on SlideShare about that. Financial, you know, we've got a few financial that I've recently spoken to, companies in the financial services space that are doing, like, for example, I'm getting an echo again. Yeah. You think about anything event-driven transactions, so processing. Sorry, is that tolerable, you guys, or is too much of an echo? Okay, see me okay?
Yep.
Perfect. I'll see more than on my side. But yeah, starting to, you know, again, that's another area where we're seeing a lot of interest and a lot of adoption is in the financial services around. You know, we talked a lot about messaging, which, I mean, but the key is also it's secure, and that's extremely secure. It's very fast secure messaging, so it's not only interesting for that Internet of Things use case, but also a lot of transactional companies in the finance space are also using NATS. So hopefully that kind of helps give a bit of a picture. The other thing I would mention on my is the Docker image. It's, you know, one of the smallest images in Docker Hub, and extremely performant, extremely simple. 7 megabytes, I believe, is the image. But a lot of people that I talk to are using Docker in their microservices architecture for the communication between the containers to scale it up, the sort of a microservices transport. Of course, this is everybody's shipping containers right now. A lot of them are using NATS as a container microservice transport. So hopefully that helps a bit. Just give you some context and the conversations I have with some developers in the open source community of companies using that.
Cool. We have a couple of questions from the audience. Matt is asking, can you talk about your experience with Go? And in particular, have you missed not having generics?
I've been coding in C Sharp for many, many years. And actually, Go is somewhat new to me. So did I miss it? Yeah, not so much. I find that Go is a great language. It's a very terse. But having come from the object-oriented world, pure OO, they're different animals. I'll just say that.
Yeah, different idioms and different habits.
I'll tell you what. Every time I go back to Go, I keep running into semicolon problems.
Okay. So another question is, how does each node in a cluster talk to each other? Something like protobufs. I don't know what protobufs are.
That's a serialization technology that's really low level.
It is. So the servers talk to each other using actually the same clear text protocol that's used between the client and the server and the client. And what they really do is they propagate. If you think about the information that needs to be shared amongst the servers in a cluster, it's really subscription information. So they do propagate that. So let's say a client subscribes to subject foo on server A, and there's a cluster of server A, B, and C. Server A will let server B and server C know about these subscriptions. So if you think about it, the servers actually subscribe to those messages to the originating server that allows the message flow to go through. And that's really some of the extent of the server communication that goes on. There's pings and pongs, essentially keep alive, if you will, just to make sure everyone's up and healthy. But apart from that, it's the same communication you would see to a client.
Okay, so you have, of course, information that's flowing around to maintain the health of the cluster, but otherwise the servers in the cluster basically also subscribe and just rebroadcast what the other servers are getting. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, it does it intelligently. So interest is only propagated where it needs to, so that information, your messages aren't necessarily spread to nodes of the clusters that don't really need to have them.
Okay, so it knows what subjects the clients that it is connected to are interested about.
Yeah.
So it kind of has the same subscription that it's on. It's an aggregation of the subscription that its own clients has?
You know, that's a great way to put it. So
okay, because I was wondering actually how this was scaling with the number of messages.
Yeah, no, it's great.
If they are all broadcasting everything, of course, you don't get much by clustering, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're all doing the same thing, and it would be very chatty. So that explains.
Yeah, and if you go to like nats.io/documentation, you can. There's a section that we talk quite extensively about how we handle auto pruning the interest graph and some of the things we do. So,
yeah, if you guys want to give me a list of links that I can put in the description, that's great. Okay.
So one thing that's interesting about that architecture is you actually use your own product. So at the point that it was poorly performing, you would very much experience that. So, I mean, obviously every product provider is motivated to provide a good product, but when you're forced to use it yourself, I think it provides an extra incentive.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I don't know who came up with it, and you hear it all the time, eating your own dog food, and probably everyone's tired of hearing it, but it's true.
Yeah.
And obviously,
can you talk about how Apsara is using the product?
Yeah, so Apsara is a product called the Trusted Cloud Platform. Allows you, it handles multi-cloud. Think of the orchestration around multi-cloud deployments. So ensuring the doing it in a policy way where you're automating IT policy and then sort of handling all the complex governance questions and issues that might come up, particularly if you're running, you know, distributed workloads in a few different environments. But that product, NATS, is used as the, you think of it as sort of the control backplane in the product for handling communication between the different components of the Trusted Cloud Platform. And again, so any issues around scalability, speed, and anything really, since it's really the guts or the core of the entire product. So we would definitely experience those in spades. Fortunately, you know, and I can tell you honestly, as a community manager, having been speaking to developers in the NATS community for 11 months now since I started, but I've yet to talk to anyone who said, you know, hey, NATS crashed, right? So they might have filed, you know, obviously it's software, they'll file other issues, or there's other things sometimes and workarounds and things, but no one has yet said to me, you know, hey, I was using NATS and it crashed and it didn't scale. So we haven't, in the Trusted Platform products, well, at Apsara, we've not experienced that either as a result, so that's been good. Does that answer the question? Does that help? So if you think about sort of the logical components of the product, NATS is the control backplane that's handling all the communication and all the messaging in a secure messaging, handling kind of the relaying the what needs to happen, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to see how a lot of the interesting and innovative things that happen in the tech community nowadays are oftentimes driven by a company that is using that innovation internally. You can see it with Facebook and React. You can see it with Google and Go. You guys, a lot of innovation here is driven by Azure.
Oh, for sure.
It's very interesting. It's interesting for the users of those technologies as well, because it kind of solves that problem of where is the technology going in 5 years? It's still going to be there. Well, you know, we kind of depend on it the same way that you guys do, so that gives a guarantee of
yeah, absolutely. One of the things really excites me about the NATS team, and you know, I'm not one of them, but certainly every, you know, our core engineering team and kind of the core group we have around it. I mean, as Colin mentioned at the beginning of the call, but everyone's got decades of experience in enterprise messaging. I should clarify. Yes, I'm part of the core team, but core engineering is what I'm referring to. People with decades of experience in messaging, so that's really exciting too. It's a great team, but we've also got a great community, and it's one of the things I like about my job is, you know, constantly meeting new people that have great ideas. They've given us a lot of great feedback on the roadmap, and you know, obviously,
so going more meta for a moment, mm-hmm. One of the things I kind of noticed with our own customers is, actually, maybe you can mute and write for a sec. Let's see if that works better. One of the things I noticed is a lot of our customers over the last, you know, 5-10 years. Wrote monolithic applications. You know, you have a single, say, ASP.NET website on the server, maybe a service, and we're starting to see those monolithic applications kind of separated out. It seems as you kind of make that progression, that's where this becomes interesting, is in, I guess, component applications. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And so I was actually at the at Scale, the Southern California Linux Expo, last week, Thursday through Sunday. And gosh, it seems like every third person I talked to, maybe, or maybe even half, but everyone was saying, look, you know, we didn't start our company, you know, 2 weeks ago, right? We've been around for a while. We've got a bunch of, as you put it, sort of monolithic applications, or however you might want to refer to it. And when these were designed, you know, we didn't have a lot of the frameworks we now have that are tailored really well to certain specific use cases, you know, we didn't necessarily have the, we didn't anticipate the usage volume, the frequency of updates. We'd have to do all sorts of things. And so you raise a really good point. A lot of people right now are saying, look, how do I break these out and decouple my architecture into a bunch of services that are running and functioning together as an application? But it's all about simplicity and simplifying, and as you said, getting smaller, the kind of that, minimizing that footprint. And that is where NATS actually fits in really, really well, because it is so lightweight. You know, obviously you don't want to try and do that and have a microservices architecture where you have a very heavy, complex, you know, chatty messaging layer. So it's a very common pattern that we're seeing, and certainly something that NATS is really well suited for.
Yeah, NATS was built from the ground up for the cloud, so there's very little configuration. It tries to do everything it can automatically and scale very well, in particularly to address microservices.
What about Internet of Things devices? How small can you go, and can you give us an idea of the smallest kinds of devices that you've seen NATS running on?
Well, I know Raspberry Pi. Brian, has there been anything smaller yet?
No, that's real popular. Yeah, I'd have to think about it. I'm sure there has been. You know, it seems like everybody right now is trying different things with IoT and sort of wrapping their head around it. And there's the good thing about that is there's all sorts of experimentation. Lots of the meetups I go to, a lot of exciting, you know, demos from the meetups. You know, the most common one I certainly see is the Raspberry Pi.
Anything on Arduino, for example?
Yeah. You know, folks are starting to look at Arduino. I've seen a few demos. I've talked to a few people that are you know, looking at that. I'm trying to think of getting smaller and smaller here. Yeah, I don't think anything smaller than Arduino.
Well, on the other hand, I mean, if you're running on the Raspberry Pi today, you know, with the recent commercialization of the Raspberry Pi Zero, it actually, I mean, it's difficult to find a device that is actually cheaper than that.
But. Yeah, that's why I was struggling. I saw it's like $5 now, right? But that's a really, really common one. You know, I mentioned John Lockwood's demo. I also went to a meetup in October in Barcelona where there's a developer there named Eric Pinto. They have a fantastic demo of, you know, he set up a Raspberry Pi, one was monitoring. It was basically how you use Raspberry Pi in your home. The one was monitoring, it was a light sensor, the other was a noise sensor, the other was measuring temperature, you know, and these were all communicating real time with NATS. Seems to be a very common one, is the Raspberry Pi. And of course, you know, you don't want it to be Internet of, you know, to try and kind of an IoT use case. You know, because a lot of these devices, you hit the nail on the head. A lot of them are really, they don't have much processing power. They're not going to have a lot of complexity to them because the whole point is to have simple devices and just lots of them. NATS is a very good fit for that because it is so lightweight and simple.
And yeah, when we talk about Internet of Things, there is a topic that really comes up and it should. Which is security. Can you tell you a little bit about how your customers secure their data using that?
So there's really two approaches. So built into NATS right now is TLS 1.2 with the latest encryption suites. If people have to relax things, there's options they can use to use older ones. But we are all about security there. And then the other thing, you know, that's going to be really interesting is in the pub-sub world, when you're broadcasting to millions of devices, how do you secure these? How do you know that the message I sent came from the publisher? And how do I decrypt that when I've got millions of subscribers? So these are really, really difficult problems to solve. But, you know, one approach is to be less focused about maybe encrypting the connection. You know, if you can, awesome. If you can't, well then, you know, the payload definitely needs to be encrypted. So there's a number of things you can look at in that respect, mainly with class-level encryption. There's a couple different things, but yeah, encryption comes up, and it's not an easy problem to solve.
I hear you basically saying that's an application-level concern.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be great if it's something that needs to be addressed, and application levels can certainly do that. It's something that they, since they know their ecosystem, know what the economy of all their applications are, they can determine that fairly well. Although, you know, it would be an interesting problem for Nats and Apsara to look at solving.
Yeah, and I would, there actually will be a meetup in March in the Bay Area. So for anyone who's interested in local, great. If not, you know, we will, you know, obviously live stream that or provide the content after. But one of the speakers from the developer community is actually going to talk about how you handle secure messaging for IoT devices with NAS. So anyone's interested, just FYI, certainly something people are doing. Do not sign up to using NAS and starting to look at how do I solve that problem.
Excellent. And actually, we're almost out of time. Are there any news that you want to share or announcements for the near future that you want to talk about?
Go ahead, Colin.
I mean, we're definitely looking forward to wrapping things up and getting Nats running on Core. You know, I'm excited to see the performance numbers we'll get out of that. And then, you know, we're kicking around some other things, maybe WCF bindings. And but we would love to hear from the community. What do you guys want to see? What would you like us to do? You know, and contributors are welcome.
Just one probably almost silly question, but right now with your .NET Framework client, that would be limited to running on Windows. I'm assuming with Core that you're intending to support that on all three operating systems. And do you expect that to be kind of interesting to your customer base?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I think in this day and age, you know, I think trends certainly are you don't typically, at least at large scale companies, run into too many people running everything on, you know, my environment looks just like this, right? So certainly I think having that that breadth is going to be really interesting.
Great.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot for being on the show today. I would love to be able to announce who will be our guest next week, but I don't know yet. So.
It's a good problem to have. We have a nice backlog going. You guys, thanks for having us. It's a fun show.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being on the show again. That was great. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going to be interested in discovering what NATS is about and trying it.
Thank you very much. Well, as Colin said, you know, if you just go to nats.io/community, there's a bunch of ways. Just pop on in, and we're pretty engaged. We're looking forward to hearing from people. So, but thank you for having us on the show. It was great.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye now.